Blog Talk Radio.
Excited Radio Podcast Show. It is August 20th, 2012. And yes, that's time to do the NFC primer. If you were with us last week, you know we broke it down for the people AFC style. This week, coming back at you NFC style. And to do that, we welcome in the stars of the show. Of course, I am your host, Rick Saratella. But first off, we got the good Reverend Ralph Mancini. Always dipping his cloth in the Jesus juice. How you doing, Ralph?
Oh, yeah. Fantasy football, 2 weeks away from opening day. Let the party begin.
And, of course, always rubbing his crystal balls, the roster diamonds, Ross Mandel. What's going on, baby?
Ready to rock and roll, Rick. Ready for the G-men to defend the title, baby.
That's right. We're going to break it down, such as in sweepers fantasy football style. You know how we do it each and every Sunday morning. If you're listening to the show, then you already know. If you're new, welcome aboard. We've got the live chat room open up for the party people, so definitely taking your questions in the chat room. Good to see G Money, Snake Eyes, Case is up, a couple guests. Love it. Can't stop, won't stop. We've got a beautiful rundown for you on this Monday. Okay. Quick announcements. We're going to be broadcasting every Sunday morning from 9 to 11 this season. 9 to 11 instead of the usual 8 a.m. start. 9 to 11 going to help try and get the West Coast audience in with us. And, of course, we will be preceding the Fantasy Taz show. So you listen to us from 9 to 11, 11 o'clock. You can hop on board to the Fantasy Taz show. Carry over right through on your Sunday football morning. Everything you need to know, get it in. Fantasy Football Insiders Radio, Rick Ross and Ralph, the Triple R Connection, going to break it down for you. And you know what, Ross, we were going to start with the New York Football Giants, a.k.a. the world champions, but we're going to have to start it off with the Eagles, because if you were watching just moments ago, Michael Vick carted off. You know, we used to crack on Donovan McRib when he was with the Eagles. Michael Vick has become the new McRib because every year it's these rib issues, Ralph. And, you know, Jermaine Cunningham just drilled Vick. Rumors he could have some broken ribs. And, you know, it wasn't Mike Kafka coming off the bench. It was Nick Foles. But let's talk about Mike Vick first. Did you see the hit? How serious is it? And what's the fantasy implications?
Well, yeah, you know,
Go ahead, Ralph.
Oh, go ahead, Ross. I'm sorry.
I saw the hit. It looked bad. But, again, he always seems to put himself in a position where he takes hits that are harder than most quarterbacks are going to take. He's flailing around out there, and bam. You know, to me, if he's got a rib issue, he's going to miss a game or two. I mean, that stuff doesn't heal in a couple of days. And you know, even if it does heal, there's going to be a bullseye on it for every single player that plays against him, as there always is. This guy's injury prone. To me, that's why he's not a top five guy.
Ralph?
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, look, before the season started, in the offseason, all you heard was Andy Reid say, well, we're going to curtail his running this season. We're going to keep him in the pocket. He's not going to take as many chances. But the fact remains that the guy is fragile. He's brittle. And, it's the thumb. It's the ribs. It's always something with this guy. And, you know, I mean, he's not going to last 16 games. He'll be lucky to give you 12 games in a season. And he's 32 years old. He's not getting any younger. So although he's still an elite talent, if the guy can't stay on the field, I mean, what good is he?
Yeah, and Rick, Rick, just to confirm, he did walk off under his own power, but he went right to the locker room for X-rays.
Well, this is definitely an issue worth monitoring. And, you know, we talk about here in New York how much the Jets are a dysfunctional ball club. I'm starting to begin to think that the Eagles are the New York Jets of the NFC. I mean, you had DeSean Jackson coming out saying he gave a half-assed effort. You know, you got the ongoing Mike Vick always injured. You got to talk about constant dynasty and never accomplish nothing. You go to three NFC championships and never get to the Super Bowl. A combination between the 1990 Bills and the 2010 Jets, whatever you want to call it, that is the Philadelphia Eagles. And let's keep it here right now, Ralph. You know, like I said, Nick Folk comes in, not Mike Kafka. You're buying or selling. I mean, Andy Reid is gushing all over about this kid. Michael Vick actually called him a great quarterback in the making. Are you buying or selling on Nick Foles?
I'm buying him long term. I mean, the guy is huge. He's got a big arm. But right now, let's just suppose Michael Vick isn't ready to start week one or he has to sit out a few weeks. I think the coach, Andy Reid, will probably be more comfortable going with Mike Kafka, who's injured, by the way, right now. He may be out another week or two with a fractured non-throwing hand. But, you know, with the way Nick Foles is playing, you know, Mr. Kafka may want to accelerate his recovery time because, as I said, he's got the strong arm, he's got the touch, Foles does, and he is the people's choice right now. But the people aren't coaching the team. I think Kafka gets the nod if something were to happen to Mike Vick in the circumstance, in the case, you know, where he couldn't play. You know, look, it takes a while to absorb this offense. Even though Foles might look good in the preseason, I think, you know, Coach Reid is going to feel more comfortable with Kafka just because of his knowledge of the offense. And, hey, if Kafka is off to a shaky start, then he's going to go to Foles immediately. But I think in the early going, I think Kafka is still the guy.
All right, well, let's talk about Mike Vick real quick because, you know, he exploded back onto the scene 2 years ago, had an incredible season. But then, you know, last year, Rev, his completion percentage dips from 62.6 to 59.8. Interceptions increase from 6 to 14. I mean, even a healthy Michael Vick, is there reason? You know, we heard Ross say he's not a top five fantasy quarterback. Is there reason to worry, you know, when it comes to drafting him for your fantasy football team?
Yeah, there's plenty of reason to worry. Look, if they keep him in the pocket like Reed said he was going to throughout the offseason, he's going to have to be a better thrower. He's going to have to be able to read offenses. But, you know, let's face it, this guy's never going to be Drew Brees. He's never going to be Peyton Manning when it comes to being a pocket passer. That's just not his game. I know he's been doing a lot of work in the film room, and I'm sure that he's a lot better than he used to be when it comes to that. But, again, that's not his game. So I think, you know, when you combine that with the fact of, you know, him just being very brittle out there in terms of his durability, I think that he'll be a nice pick maybe, for me anyway, from a fantasy perspective, he'll be a nice pick somewhere in the fifth round, but I wouldn't touch him before that.
You know, the other interesting battle that we're all watching here in fantasy football land, everybody knows LeSean McCoy is a stud. If you're in a deep league like we are, fellas, you know, handcuffing your top running back is always a good investment. But people want to know, you know, there's an interesting backup running back battle going on in Philadelphia camp. You got the kid Chris Polk, undrafted, Bryce Brown drafted in the sixth round. Of course, Deion Lewis, who was selected last season in last year's draft. Ralph, I mean, who has the heads-up advantage here? Who do you see in the short term? How does it ultimately play out if you do want to handcuff LeSean McCoy?
Well, barring injury, Deion Lewis is going to be the number two back in Philly. He's had an impressive camp. He's small, but he's thick, and he's a patient runner. Behind him, I think Bryce Brown is going to be the number three back. He's another guy with a lot of speed and the ability to catch the ball. But then By the same token, you also have Chris Polk, a guy who surprisingly went undrafted, but the Eagles like him a lot. He's very talented in his own right, and the Eagles are actually considering putting Polk in as a fullback, so he very well may replace Owen Schmidt in that role. So, but right now, I think the pecking order is Deion Lewis number one, Bryce Brown number two, and Chris Polk may be your fullback.
Very interesting. A lot could still change. It's a very close competitive battle there in Philadelphia. Ross, let's get all that Mike Vick chit-chat out of the way and get back to where we were supposed to open up the show, and that's with the world champion New York Football Giants. We talked about the Philadelphia Eagles training camp battle. You know, the Giants actually have a couple training camp battles themselves. Let's start off with Ahmad Bradshaw, who, you know, left the game early the other night with a hand injury. You know, David Wilson, we all heard about the fumbling problems. Darrell Scott last year kind of had a similar issue. Of course, Joe Martinick, undrafted free agent, is in the mix. And, of course, good old DJ Danny Ware still in the mix there, kind of with the veteran upper hand edge. I mean, Ahmad Bradshaw, let's be honest, this guy always has some kind of injury. Nick Denakt, always some kind of injury he battles through. Who is the go-to guy behind Bradshaw with Brandon Jacobs' departure now and that G-Men uniform?
I don't know if you can use go-to to describe anything having to do with the Giants' rushing attack. I mean, awful last year, hasn't looked any better this year. I know I'm complaining even though they won the title, but run the ball. Come on, man. David Wilson, you know, explosive. I'd expect him to eventually grab hold of this job, but that doesn't mean that the Mixmaster DJ Ware is not going to contribute. You know, I think Ware could be the goal line guy. Basically, the 1A to Bradshaw's 1 is going to be Wilson. You know, Ware might get the odd goal line carry, but I like Wilson here in this role. Andre Brown has put on weight in an effort to be the next Brandon Jacobs, but do you really want to be the next Brandon Jacobs? I don't think you do. You know, all told, if you say hit or miss, his Giant career to me was a miss. Bradshaw's got to get healthy. He's got the hand issue now. But look, the bottom line is, even when healthy, he's only effective on an inconsistent basis. And that rushing attack, I'm telling you, it's going to present a problem. But hopefully David Wilson will be able to chip in a little bit. I'd look for him to be the 1A to Bradshaw's 1.
Worth stashing on your bench in deeper leagues.
Yeah, they like him. And, you know, if they like you and someone's not doing the job, you're going to get thrown in there. I mean, the Giants don't mess around with that kind of thing.
All right. Another training camp battle going on is that number 3 wide receiver position. Hakeem Nicks still a little banged up. Of course, Victor Cruz, obviously the number 1 and number 2 guy. But Mario Manningham, another guy who departs during the offseason. They select Reuben Randall. They got Janelle Jernigan from a year ago. Of course, we're still waiting for Ramses Barden to come around on the fence. But, you know, I think even Dominic Hickson is still around these days. Who is that number 3 wide receiver with the G-Men? We all saw Cruz / Manningham in that number 3 role. This could have some fantasy football value here. Who wins this battle?
Yeah, now you're talking about a position that actually could produce at some point. And look, Dominic Hickson seems like he's been on this team for 100 years, and he's played like 2 games in the regular season. I mean, this guy's always hurt. But he's been running with the number ones with Nicks out. He can produce, but can he stay healthy? You know, Reuben Randall's going through the expected growing pains, but he's been very impressive at times. And don't forget, as you mentioned, Jernigan, he was completely lost last year without OTAs, but he's come on. And, you know, our old NFL DB favorite, Ramses Barden, he's going to get his last chance to provide some production. To me, Hickson's going to get a shot to deal with this number 3 job, but I think this is going to be something that's ongoing throughout the season, this number 3 battle. And Coughlin has to like the competition. I think eventually Randall is going to secure the job. That's what they drafted him for. I think that's what he's going to end up being midway through the season. But again, if Hickson stays healthy the first 8 games and he's productive, they're not going to take him off the field. But history says that's simply not going to happen. So I'd look for Reuben Randall to end up with that job by midseason.
Yeah, the rookie wideout, that's what the Giants are hoping. The Giants also addressed the tight end position in the draft this year, selecting a rookie tight end. And, you know, if you heard general manager Jerry Reese after the draft, he said Adrian Robinson is the JPP of tight ends. And if you don't know Adrian Robinson, you might not live in New York, but here's a name you might want to know because this kid has incredible athleticism, JPP freakish type athleticism, blew up his pro day. Now, I got to ask you, Ross, you buying or selling this whole Adrian Robinson is the JPP of tight ends?
Well, you know, it depends what you mean by JPP of tight ends. You know, freakish athleticism, great, but when you're on the defensive line, you could just go. But when you're a tight end, there's a lot of other things you have to do. Primarily, if you're on the New York Football Giants, you got to block. And this kid is severely lacking in the blocking scheme. I'm not sure if he even blocked once in college in that spread offense in Cincinnati. I mean, it's going to take him some time to develop, but the Giants knew that when they drafted him, and they can afford to wait. And look, when was the last time the Giants had a mega productive tight end? You know, the best year of Shockey's career, maybe? Come on, they haven't had one in a very long time. So they can wait with this kid. They'll ease him in slowly. He's got to learn how to block. And I see the athleticism, and I've seen him play, you know, Big East football and all that, rah-rah, but you're going to have to block in the NFL. And right now he can't do that, so he's not going to see the field.
So I guess you're saying you would select Martellus Bennett over Adrian Robinson when it comes to the Giants tight end situation.
If you're in a non-dynasty league and you're just playing for this year, yes, I would.
Okay, very good. We got the Eagles and the Giants down. Dallas and Washington coming up. This is the NFC Primer Fantasy Football Insiders radio show. Glad to see we got Fantasy Taz in the chat room holding it down as always. And like we said at the top of the show, starting week one of the NFL regular season, week one through the entire season, we'll be broadcasting live every morning, 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern time. Every Sunday morning, Fantasy Taz will then take over at 11 a.m. So your Sunday morning will be jam-packed of nonstop fantasy football chatter. And we got the chit-chat going in the chat room. Nick Foles driving the Eagles. G-Money, thanks for the update on that. We got a question coming in. Woo! Let's see. Snake Eyes in the chat room. 12th pick in the draft. Marshawn Lynch, Matthew Forte, or Jimmy Graham? I'm going to go over to the good Reverend Ralph Mancini. Who do you like here?
Well, that was actually answering a question. I think it was Mark SD that was asking that question. He's drafting 12th, and we've had a number of suggestions. We've had Gronkowski thrown out. We had Marshawn Lynch, Forte, Jimmy Graham. To me, you know, if you can snatch up Marshawn Lynch or Forte, I think you'll be fine with the 12th pick. That's because the running backs this year are just not that good once you get past the top three. There are not a lot of reliable guys out there. A lot of these players that we're talking about between D-Mac and a lot of other these players, Murray, they could be potential busts. Chris Johnson, you don't know what you're going to get out of him. So, you know, once you get down to the latter part of the first round, you know, I think you want to go with some short things at the running back position. And I think, you know, Marshawn Lynch is a guy who's going to score a lot of touchdowns. I don't think he's going to get suspended. I didn't hear anything about him being suspended this year. And as far as Forte is concerned, he's a guy that I know he's going to have a lot of his touchdowns taken away from Michael Bush, but he's a guy that each and every year, especially in a PPR league, he gives you the yards, and he plays, I mean, you know, he always plays 16 games. This past year, he missed four games, or prior to that, he was a guy who was very steady, very durable. So I like those two running backs if I'm picking at the end of the first round.
Yeah, and I apologize for that. It is Mark SD Ross in the chat room. Flex League standard scoring, 12-team snake draft, and he has the last pick in the first round, 12th overall pick. Now, you heard the Reverend toss out Matt Forte. Taz in the chat room kind of disagreeing, saying that's too early for Forte. You know, Mark SD chiming back in, saying even DeMarco Murray, which I think, considering the injury factor, is also too early. What's your take here with the 12th pick in the first round? Who would you be targeting, Ross?
Yeah, I kind of, oddly, I don't think it's happened before in the 10 years that we've been doing this show, but I'm actually with Taz on this one. I like Gronkowski at that spot. simply because of the value factor. You know, you can pass on Forte, and the next pick you get end up with a Steven Jackson. But to me, if Gronkowski's there at the end, the rarity of the skill at his position and the bonus that he's going to bring you from that position, the drop-off, other than Jimmy Graham, obviously, is so far that I would take him there. And then I'd rather have Gronkowski and Steven Jackson than Matt Forte and whoever else you're going to take at 24. You know, Marshawn, you could probably get Marshawn Lynch down there.
I agree. So there you go, Mark SD. Anybody else? I see the chat room starting to fill up a little bit. So shout out to all my chat room people. We got Joey Everett in the chat room now, Rookie Draft. Follow him at Rookie Draft. Follow Taz at Fantasy Taz. Of course, you got myself, Rick Saratella, Ross Mandel, Rostradamus NFL on Twitter, and the good Reverend Ralph Mancini. You can follow him as well at Reverend Ralph. So there's the Twitter shout outs. Again, we're going to be broadcasting live every Sunday morning, 9 to 11, followed by Fantasy Taz at 11 a.m. taking over. So, you know, stay tuned. We might even do another show before the season gets started. Of course, you can log on to NFLDraftBible.com or follow us on Twitter for all that good stuff. And I also want to throw out there, anybody looking for the 2013 preseason NFL Draft Bible Big Board, we're up close to about 2,000 players ranked on our NFL Draft Bible Big Board preseason edition. If you want a free copy, email us at media@NFLDraftBible.com. That's media@NFLDraftBible.com. Just put Big Board in the subject. We'll send you over a copy of the preseason NFL Draft Bible Big Board, about 2,000 people ranked players. And, of course, yours truly and Ross and Ralph, Joe and Taz, people like that. We're getting feedback all day long. Fantasy Football Insiders radio show, 20 minutes down, 100 minutes to go. Let's do this, people. Like I said, we got the Giants and Eagles down. Let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys, Ross, where Dez Bryant joins Miles Austin and Jason Witten as players on the shelf. I got to ask you, you know, I know this wasn't in our rundown officially, but with the latest news, Dez Bryant going in MRI on his knee, I believe Kevin Ogletree moving on up the totem pole in Dallas. Originally, I was going to ask you who's more valuable, Dez Bryant or Miles Austin. We could talk about that, but let's talk a little bit about Kevin Ogletree's fantasy football value.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't know how much value he has. Bryant, MRI, no structural damage. He'll be all right. He'll just rest a little bit. But look, Ogletree, to me, number three guy there. And, you know, as long as Miles Austin shows that his hamstring is going to be balky, maybe he gets a run at number two. I'm not that confident in his ability. He hasn't shown me the ability to do much. Look, what he had last year, less than 200 yards, didn't score. You know, preseason, everybody's talking everybody up. But I don't have a lot of faith in him, and I think Dallas definitely wants Austin and Bryant out there, obviously. But number three guy in Dallas, I don't know. I don't see Ogletree holding that job for 16 games at all.
So are we going with Dez Bryant or Miles Austin throughout the course of the season? Who are you selecting first?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think, you know, look, Dez Bryant, 928 yards, 9 touchdowns last year, but didn't have more than 90 yards in any single game. To me, you look at him, you see him play in college, you think this guy should be a top five guys with that, with those skills, with that frame and that offense. This could be the season that he takes that step that everyone expects if he keeps his head together, but that's a big if. Then you have Austin, you know, 2009, 2010 showed us what he can do. In 2011, he showed us he's a bit of an injury risk, missed six games. He's already missing time now with the aforementioned hamstring. I have Dez Bryant as my number 14 receiver, and I have Austin as my number 22. So I would go with Bryant by a little bit. But, again, but you talk to me in 2 weeks, you talk to me in 2 months, many factors could reverse those roles or widen the gap. But for now, I'll take Dez Bryant.
And, of course, Miles Austin, the Monmouth representative, jersey in the house. All right,
yeah.
Let's talk about that Jason Witten injury. I mean, what's the impact and analysis on his fantasy football stock? Do you knock him down a couple notches? Where does he fall in the pecking order You know, you got the emergence of Gronko, Jimmy Graham, Aaron Hernandez, even Vernon Davis, I think, at this point is ahead of Witten. Where does Witten exactly fall now, especially with the injury? He's going to miss the entire preseason.
Yeah, this isn't a high ankle sprain. You know, this is a lacerated spleen. This is has the potential to be a big deal. And you know, he couldn't do any activity for 7 to 10 days. It's a potential nightmare injury. I mean, if they go in there and they evaluate him, he may need surgery. I don't think he's going to play against the Giants in Week 1, and it could be beyond that that he misses time. So to me, what do they got? John Phillips in there? He's got an ankle injury. They're really going to be hurting if Witten is going to miss any time. And I'm hesitant to have Witten in my top 8 tight ends. I mean, I got to find out, is he going to be on the field? Is he going to miss one game? Is he going to miss more than that? I think that 10 days where they're going to be able to evaluate how large the laceration is coming up, and then we'll know. I mean, he might just need to rest for a couple of weeks, or they may need to go in and fix it. So this is a little bit of an underreported injury, I think. I mean, Jason Witten could miss significant time with this injury.
And it's funny how the NFL works sometimes. Just when you think Martellus Bennett isn't wanted, I bet the Cowboys now wishing that maybe they did hold on to Bennett for another season. And a lot of questions.
James Hanna, baby.
Yeah, a lot of question marks in the Big D this year. And for all the talking out of the side of his neck that Jerry Jones does, I got to tell you, this team has a lot of question marks. They might be the Jets of the NFC. DeMarco Murray, you know, we saw flashes of brilliance before the injury last year, Ross. Are you buying or selling? You know, we saw Mark SD in the chat room considering him at the 12th overall pick, which I think is way too high for DeMarco Murray. But you buying or selling on DeMarco Murray this season?
Yeah, I'm buying DeMarco Murray this season. But, you know, I mean, he's not a top five guy. He ran for 895 yards and didn't get serious carries until week 7 when he went off for 253 against the Rams. He had a 5.5 yards per carry average. He can block. He doesn't shy from contact. To me, Felix Jones is going to look pretty nice on the sidelines in that uniform. And Felix Jones may stay healthy this year because he's not going to be on the field an awful lot. I like Murray. I especially like him in that offense. And even, you know, we're talking about Witten missing time, maybe Austin missing time. That means extra carries, extra touches going somewhere. And I think they're going to be receptions and carries for DeMarco Murray. I have him ranked as my 8th running back.
Wow. That high. Ralph, on board, agree or disagree, ranking DeMarco Murray that high?
I like DeMarco Murray a lot. But to me, I would be nervous if he's my number one running back. I would prefer him as my number two running back. So if I can get a number one guy in the first round and then turn around and pick him up in the second round, which probably won't happen in most leagues, but that's the only way I'm really going to feel comfortable taking DeMarco Murray.
I don't think the 8th running back is going in the first round.
Well, it depends how big the league is. But, if I can get him in the second round, I'm with you. I like DeMarco Murray.
It's funny because here's a guy I was all about last season as a steal, but now that his value is so high, I'm going to sell on DeMarco Murray. I don't want to touch this guy. He's been injury prone going back to his college days, and I just don't have the confidence for him to stay healthy at all. Of course, you still got Felix Jones lingering. Phillip Tanner might be the best running back on the roster, but what do I know? I'm not the head coach. That's Jason Garrett's job to eventually lose.
Rick, I look at the guys that might be ahead of him. And you know, Foster, Rice, McCoy, Forte, and then who's not a question mark after that? MJD, McFadden, Charles, you know, Chris Johnson, Steven Jackson.
Well, I'd rather have Marshawn Lynch rather than Murray.
I think I'd rather have everybody you named though, DeMarco Murray. But that's
okay.
You know, I don't want to dwell too much time on DeMarco Murray. We'll keep it on moving here with the Washington Redskins. And if somebody mentions the fact one more time that they beat the New York Giants twice last season, like that's their glimmer of hope because now they got RG3 in the
Hoop,
house.
You mean Bob Griffin?
I swear to God, I don't know what I'm going to do. But this whole RG3 phenomenon, you know, we saw something kind of similar last year with Cam Newton coming in, taking the league by storm. Is he going to have that kind of impact, Ralph? Is he capable of having that kind of impact? Mike Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan kind of catering the offense around RG3's abilities. They went out, signed some wide receivers in free agency, has more weapons to work with than an Andrew Luck. What do you see in the initial season of RG3?
Well, the word you keep on hearing about RG3 is the fact that he's poised. And while he certainly doesn't look like a deer in the headlights, people need to slow down when they talk about the rookie quarterback as if he can do no wrong. You know, his biggest problem may be his offensive line. You know, versus the Bears this past Saturday, Griffin was sacked three times and even had a fumble. You know, RG3, he's a little bit on the thin side, and I think that eventually he's going to break if he's forced to run for his life, even with his world-class speed. You know, look, overall, he's a major upgrade over guys like Rex Grossman and John Beck, but he's going to have his ups and downs this year. And again, the thing that I'm worried about the most with him is the fact that he's going to miss some games behind that leaky front five. You know, to assume that he's going to be the next Cam Newton, I think, is unwarranted, because he's a different player from Cam Newton. First of all, he's not as big as Cam Newton. He is on the thin side. So to me, the thing that worries me the most about him is his durability, his lack of size. He's only about 216 pounds, roughly. So that's what I'm looking at with RG3.
I mean, Cam Newton has about 20, 25 pounds and a couple inches on RG3. So, you know, let's not get too carried away from all the comparisons that I hear out there. I love Russ's comment, poised to lose 11 games maybe, but hey, that's the Washington Redskins for you. They did go out, spend a little money despite the salary cap penalties they received. They were able to land a guy like Pierre Garçon, almost 1,000 yards and six touchdowns last year with the Colts. They got a guy like Josh Morgan. Anthony Armstrong is obviously in the mix, but you know, Pierre Garçon has never been a number one wide receiver in his career. Comes over to the Washington Redskins to play that role. Are you buying or selling, Ralph? Do you see over or under the kind of season he had last year, 947 yards and six touchdowns?
Well, a lot of it's going to depend on, you know, how many games you're going to get out of RG3. Look, as far as Pierre Garçon is concerned, I think he's still a work in progress, and that he drops the easiest of passes and sometimes will just totally disappear from a game. But then again, he's also a player who's big, strong, fast, and has the quickness to make him very difficult to cover one-on-one. You mentioned that he did gain 947 yards with subpar quarterbacks throwing to him last year. You know, from what I've seen so far, I'm buying Pierre Garçon. I think he can reach 1,000 yards, maybe even 1,100 yards with the Shanahans at the controls. He's got to improve his consistency. But he's a guy who's still very young. Remember, he's a small school guy. He's still developing. And I think that, you know, within that system led by the Shanahans, father and son, I think Garçon has the tools, has the skills to improve.
And just ask Joe Everett in the chat room. He knows, all you people in Washington, you're going to learn to speak French. you know, every day I see a new report emerging as far as who the starting running back in Washington, D.C. is going to be. One day it's Roy Helu, another day it's Evan Royster, then Tim Hightower, then Alfred Morris. I mean, I don't know, you know, maybe Clinton Portis is down for a cameo over here. At the end of the day, as Antoine Rowe might say, Ralph, who's it going to be?
Yeah, it's like throwing darts at the wall. I mean, Roy Helu, he's been dealing with an Achilles issue. Tim Hightower's recovery from last year's knee injury has been slow. Look, if you put a gun to my head, I think the favorite to start the season as a starter is Evan Royster. You know, while Helu has more burst than Royster, the Penn State product has superior vision and running instincts, not to mention the fact that he can block and he can catch. You know, then we also throw in another guy, Alfred Morris. He's more of a quality inside runner, but I don't think he's as complete as the other backs that I mentioned. So right now, gun to my head, I'm going to have to say Evan Royster.
Very interesting. I mean, you know, Shanahan in Washington has been known to rotate running backs like there's no tomorrow. Ross, just curious to get your opinion in terms of the Redskins running back battle. I mean, who do you see having the most fantasy football value over the course of the season when it comes to the Redskins?
Yeah, you know, Rev's right about this Roy Helu thing. He's just not durable. And Royster's certainly going to get his chance, but I don't know, man. His burst is lacking, and he has the Reverend's favorite nitpick, which is he runs too upright. I think he's going to end up getting injured too. They're high on Royster. I don't see it. It's going to be another running back by committee to me with, you know, Alfred Morris, who looked better than Royster to me. And you know, you throw Tim Hightower in there for real. When he shows he's recovered from ACL surgery, I would avoid the whole situation. But if you made me pick one guy, I'd take Morris.
Very interesting. You know, I kind of have a sneaky feeling Alfred Morris could be a guy that you soon know coming to a living room near you. Before we move on to the NFC North, going back over to the chat room, Pierre Garcon, ninth round pick, Rev, over, under, how do you see his value?
Look, I wouldn't break the bank to get Pierre Garcon, so I would say I would rather take him in the ninth round as opposed to the eighth round.
Okay, fair enough. We're going to take a little quick 30-second break and come right back with the NFC North. So to do that, enjoy this. Party people that need to blow their nose and take a sip of Jesus juice, as Tim Tebow might say.
People happy they don't have to hear Joe Buck after that.
Yeah, old school, baby. That's how we do it. Fantasy Football Insiders Radio. Rick Saratella, Ross Mandel, Ralph Mancini. Breaking it down for the people now. NFC Primer Edition. Of course, if you missed our AFC show, you can check us out right here on the All Access Football Archives. But we will be broadcasting live each and every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. 9 to 11, week 1 through 17. Ha, 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 get that ring polish out, baby, because this is how we do it. Of course, 11 a.m. Fantasy Taz will be taking over, so we're hitting you hard, hitting you real hard this year, back to back, belly to belly, and all that good stuff. Let's move it on to the NFC North, fellas, where – you know, the Packers, Ralph, had a disappointing season losing to those G-men in the playoffs. Explosive offense, Garboso defense. But for fantasy football purposes, let's focus on the offense. And first off, they signed Cedric Benson at running back with James Starks, I believe, is a little bit banged up. They also got Alex Green in the mix. So here's another training camp battle worth watching in terms of fantasy football implications. Who comes out on top in this running back battle?
Yeah, a lot of question marks in Tiletown, USA. Look, right now, Cedric Benson is the man to own in Green Bay's backfield. He's never going to remind you of Marshall Faulk in his prime, but the guy is big and he's durable. James Starks is also a very big running back, but he gets hurt a lot. And he's going to be out for at least another 2 weeks with a turf toe issue. And even prior to his injury, Starks wasn't having a good camp. Look, he's not going to make too many defenders miss. And then you also brought up Alex Green, and he's the guy to own in Dynasty Leagues. I watched him a couple of days ago, last Friday, and his burst is back. Let's not forget, he's a guy who injured his knee last year. But he was cutting again, and Alex Green, you know, showed in his preseason performance that, you know, talent-wise, I think he's the best back in Green Bay. But right now, right here and now, you have to go with Cedric Benson as the number one guy in Green Bay. And then another guy that they have there, another player, is Mark Tyler. He's, to me, he's a bit of a plotter. He's got tight hips. Not a big fan of him. So if I had to rank them, I would say Cedric Benson 1. I would want to have Alex Green number 2, Starks 3, and then maybe Mark Tyler 4 if he even makes the team.
And, of course, you always got John Kuhn in the mix, taking away those goal line carries, too. I know for touchdown leagues, Kuhn could always be a sleeper guy in the mix. Another couple of players in the mix at wide receiver, Ralph, James Jones and Randall Cobb. You know, we saw Cobb holding, you know, have issues holding on to the football a little bit last year. James Jones kind of gets a little bit better each and every year. These two guys are kind of battling for balls. I mean, who's going to get targeted more with Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball? One of these guys is going to be a valuable commodity. Who are you leaning towards, James Jones or Randall Cobb?
Well, look, the only reason why James Jones is still on the team is because Aaron Rodgers likes him, and he convinced Green Bay to re-sign him prior to the 2011 season. I'm not saying that Jones is a bum. He's got a lot of ability, but he's inconsistent, and he drops too many balls. To me, I'd rather have Randall Cobb. To me, I think Randall Cobb is also an unfinished product, you know, but I see so much upside with Randall Cobb. He can definitely be Donald Driver's successor as a slot receiver. He's a very good run-after-catch guy. Cobb just has a second gear in the open field that can make him a special weapon. I think that his role is going to grow by a lot this year, and I think by the end of the season, I think Randall Cobb will be the more valuable wide receiver than James Jones.
Yeah, big play, explosive wide receiver. That is Randall Cobb, definitely a name to keep in the memory bank towards the latter part of your fantasy football draft. Maybe a late-round steal. Randall Cobb could be good for 7-plus touchdowns. You heard it here first, Fantasy Football Insiders radio show. Buying or selling, you know, there's been a lot of talk, and here's a guy I have on one of my dynasty teams, Rev. As you might know, Jordy Nelson, this guy, I mean, he stepped up as a stud last year, especially in PPR leagues. This guy was catching everything thrown his way. And I got to be honest, I was offered Wes Welker for Jordy Nelson, and I turned it down. Now, tell me if I'm crazy. Is Jordy Nelson more valuable than Wes Welker in a PPR league?
Well, they're close, but I'd rather have Nelson, to be honest with you. I think Nelson has developed the same type of chemistry with Rodgers that Tom Brady has with Wes Welker. The difference is that Nelson has more dimensions to his game than Welker does. Nelson can line up at multiple spots. He's bigger, faster, and he's going to catch more touchdowns. And especially in performance leagues that value touchdowns of 20 or 40 yards or more, I think it's a no-brainer. Jordy Nelson is the man here.
He abused Joe Hayden the other night, man.
He did. He did. So, Ross, I mean, are you on board with me? I mean, tell me, am I crazy? I turned down Wes Welker for Jordy Nelson. I said, no, I want Jordy Nelson.
PPR league, I don't think you're crazy. I think an argument could be made either way. But I'll tell you this, Nelson's year last year was no fluke. He's going to do it again.
I agree. And, you know, speaking of outrageous statements, Ross, let's transition over to those Detroit Lions, who I have pegged headed for the Super Bowl. But Calvin Johnson, you know, some people might say he's the number one fantasy football player, period.
Well, they could say that. I could even make an argument that way. Look, 1,681 yards and 16 touchdowns, and he can certainly get better in that offense with you know, so many running backs in fantasy football sharing time, getting injured. I'd have no problem taking him number one after all. If you think about it, 16 touchdowns, Foster had 12, McCoy 20, Rice 15. But I have more confidence in Calvin Johnson repeating or exceeding that than those running backs. Plus, you know, your second wide receiver in the draft, you know, who is it? Fitzgerald, Welker, you know, Nelson, Julio Jones, A.J. Green, they have far less value been passing on McCoy and getting someone like DeMarco Murray or Marshawn Lynch with the second pick. I would rather have a guy like Calvin Johnson and DeMarco Murray than Arian Foster and Larry Fitzgerald. So to me, I don't think it's crazy at all taking Calvin Johnson number one.
Yeah, hard to disagree. I mean, like you said, the kid still oozes potential, still has room to get better. I don't think he's reached the ceiling, so I think actually he's just scratched the surface. So watch out now, Calvin Johnson, a.k.a. Megatron. Speaking of backfield by committees, could there be any more of a committee than we have in Detroit? I mean, I don't even know what to make of this situation. You got three running backs. None of them can stay healthy. How does this whole situation unfold, Ross?
I think it stays folded. I think, look, the bottom line is Best is out. What else is new? LeSure's hurt. He's suspended, although, you know, he's practicing apparently or cleared to resume practice, but he's suspended. Kevin Smith is worth a shot. The guy, you know, people laugh. The guy played seven games last year. He had 539 total yards and seven touchdowns, 4.9 a carry. He's going to get 15-plus touches to begin the season. And that offense, that's worth a pick, you know, not anything more than a flex pick to me. The guy's only 25 years old.
Yeah, but
sure,
he's made of styrofoam.
He made of styrofoam, but Ralph, seven TDs in seven games, he's worth a late-round pick, no?
I mean, look, if I already have my top three running backs, I might grab him as a number four back in a fantasy
league.
Yeah,
you play
him
until he gets hurt.
Yeah.
Well, Ralph, is he the number one guy in that Detroit backfield?
Well, yeah. I mean, right now he is. I mean, honestly, I think at some point during the season, I think Detroit's going to go out and they're going to acquire some free agent out there that's going to contribute because I don't see any of these three backs being durable enough to last the season. You know, maybe they might pick up a guy like Ryan Grant at some point. They were supposed to pick him up a few months ago. I don't know what happened there. But, yeah, I mean, you know, right now I'm going to have to agree with Ross, you know, with Kevin Smith being the number one guy.
Yeah, kind of interesting. They just sat back on the whole Cedric Benson possibility, and meanwhile their division rivals, Green Bay, snatches them up. You know, listen, I like everything that the GM's done there in Detroit, but I think he was sleeping at the wheel on that one. Anyway, with that being said, I still believe in this team, Ross. Are you believing that they could be Nolan's bound this season?
No, not at all. Look, the defense has players, but they just don't have any discipline, and the system, to me, is weak. This is not 1995. I mean, you're running a cover two. There's not enough maturity. There's not enough talent on the defense overall. You know, to me, they're lucky if they finish second in the division. I could see them finishing behind both Green Bay and Chicago. I think they'll finish 10-6 because of the offense, because I love Matt Stafford. And obviously Calvin Johnson's a stud, and I think they have a lot of other receivers, and we'll get to that, you know, in our later segment, that are going to surprise and do well this year. But on the other side of the ball, I just think they make too many stupid mistakes, and in a division like that, you're not going to get away with that when you're only playing 16 games.
Fair enough. So, you know, Ross is shooting down the hopes of Super Bowl 47 for the Lions. Fair enough. And you heard Ross say Chicago might even finish above the Lions, Ralph. And, you know, the big story there, Jay Cutler, Brandon Marshall reunite. We saw them hook up in the preseason the other night. Are they better than the first time around?
Yeah, look, I don't have any faith in the Lions either. I don't like their secondary at all. Getting to the Bears, though, you know, you mentioned Jay Cutler and Marshall reunited, and it feels so good. I am I buying them? Yeah, I think so. I think they're both going to be better than they were during their Denver years. Cutler is certainly a better quarterback, and Marshall, he looks to be 100% committed right now, you know, as far as his football business is concerned. You know, Marshall, the former Bronco, the former Dolphin, he's been unstoppable in training camp by constantly beating Chicago's best cornerback, Charles Peanut Tillman, to a pulp on his pass routes. And then Cutler, on the other hand, he's become a better game manager. And to me, I look at him and he's not making as many of the dumb mistakes that he made before. So I like Cutler and I like Marshall together, and I think they're both better players than they were a few years ago.
Yeah, hard to argue with that. You know, we got the Alshon Jeffrey question last week. This week we talk about, you know, behind Brandon Marshall. Everybody wants to know who's the number two guy in Chicago, and is he worth drafting for your fantasy football team? Is it Alshon Jeffrey? And if it's not, who is it? Who else is in the mix here in Chicago? I know you're a big Earl Bennett fan.
Yeah, I'm a big Jeffrey fan and Earl Bennett fan. By the end of the season, the number two guy could very well be Alshon Jeffrey. But right now, I'm going to tell you that Earl Bennett is a late-round sleeper who is probably the number two guy due to his chemistry with Cutler. Let's not forget, you know, they both went to Vanderbilt together once upon a time. And Bennett he's had some impressive performances over the past 2 years as Cutler's safety valve. Then the other guy you have there is Devin Hester, but I wouldn't expect big numbers out of him. The team has been trying to make him a wide receiver for the past 5 years, but to me, he just has much more value as a return guy. So I think the safest bet there is Earl Bennett. And then, of course, you also have Johnny Knox, who is recovering from his injury. And,
oh, yeah, I remember him.
And unfortunately, if it were me, if I were coaching the team, I'd tell Johnny Knox, you know, just to hang loose and sit back because he's got to get that neck better. And quite honestly, he might have to consider retirement after the type of injury he suffered. So I don't even think he's a factor this year. But to me, Earl Bennett's the guy behind Marshall.
Well, I know we talked a little bit about Jake Cutler and the feel-good story, hooking up, reuniting with Brandon Marshall. But, you know, we saw the Bears collapse when Cutler went down last season. And I'm not quite sure I saw anything that tells me that the Bears' offensive line is improved. You know, I saw personally Jake Cutler going awfully high ahead of some quarterbacks that he doesn't deserve to be going ahead of in my fantasy drafts. With this offensive line, I'm not even sure that he survives the season again. I mean, this guy, you talk about Johnny Knox might need to retire. I'm thinking Jay Cutler might have to retire after this year.
Well, I mean, I haven't been in any of your fantasy drafts, but in my fantasy drafts so far, he's going, I know in one fantasy draft, he went like about in the eighth round. So I think if you get him there, eighth, ninth round, I think that's a nice value pick for Jay Cutler. Look, the O-line has a lot of holes, but it's showing some progress. You know, versus Washington on Saturday, they weren't dominant, but they did a pretty fair job in pass protection. The man on the spot is Cutler's blindside protector, and that's Jamarcus Webb. Mike Tice, who's the offensive coordinator now, he hasn't guaranteed him a starting spot at left tackle. But, you know, in Webb's defense, he has shown improved technique thus far, and he's playing with more tenacity. If they could keep Gabe Kareemi healthy on the right side, and if Webb continues to show improvement on the left side, I expect this offensive line to be improved. They're not going to be dominant. They're probably not even going to be that good. But if they can just be good enough, then that's going to be a big improvement. So I'm seeing signs of improvement, so I'm going to be optimistic.
Any word on Gabe Kareemi over there? I know he missed the year last season. I think he's in the mix this season. I don't know how he's doing. Just wondering maybe if you heard anything on Kareemi.
Well, I haven't heard anything as far as his performance on the field, but, you know, as far as I know, I mean, he's the right tackle there, and he's a guy with a lot of promise who comes from Wisconsin, a guy that certainly should help out the running game.
They're hoping that he starts this season, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
right now they put him in the first round. Yeah.
All right. Well, that'll be a big boost. But you know, I'm not sure I'm buying this Bears offensive line. I don't know about this over here. And you know what? That might make you say Matthew Forte. I don't know about him either, to be honest.
Well, hey, you know something? You look throughout the NFL. How many great offensive lines do you have? You know,
well,
there's
a big distance between great and what the Bears are.
Yeah, but look, let me ask you something. Do you think Aaron Rodgers plays 16 games? I mean, there's always a chance that he can get knocked down too.
Last year.
You got a guy like Marshall Newhouse at left tackle, And he's no bed of roses there either. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you look at a lot of offensive lines throughout the league, and there are question marks all over the place.
Yeah, but to go through last year what they did with Jamarcus Webb, and he's still starting there, I don't understand that.
Well, he has shown some improvement. He's a young player. And look, and you got to remember one thing. They have a new offensive coordinator in town now. Mike Martz doesn't know the first thing about pass protection.
Well,
with Mike Tyson there now at the controls, they're going to focus a little bit more on the running game, and I think that Jay Cutler should be a little bit safer. I'm not guaranteeing that he's going to last the season, but I think he's going to be in a little bit better shape than he was last year under
Mike
Martz.
Rev, what are they going to do with Chris Williams? I mean, is that just a waste?
Well, you know, listen, that 2008 draft, a lot of teams reached for tackles, and Chris Williams, he's not a left tackle, he's a guard, just like a lot of other guys that were overdrafted, a lot of guys at the tackle position. So Chris Williams is a guard. He's not a left tackle. He's not even a right tackle.
Yeah, but, you know, to me, their guards aren't that high. You know, Lance Loves isn't gonna help it out, a right guard. It's amazing to me that Williams can't crack that line.
Yeah. Look, it's not an ideal situation.
We'll see. Jay Cutler might get killed once again, but we shall see. It'll be definitely, you know, for me, I got the hazard lights on when it comes to drafting Jay Cutler, but that's just me. A lot of people got the hazard lights on when it comes to Christian Ponder over in Minnesota, Ross. Here's a guy we all liked coming out of Florida State. I think the best is still yet to come. In terms of fantasy football, though, a lot of mixed feelings. You buying or selling Christian Ponder?
Well, depends what you're using him for. You know, 13 touchdowns, 13 picks last year, bad, bad decisions. But look, that's what you expect out of a rookie that's not an elite rookie. They went out and got Jerome Simpson, who's going to be suspended to start the season. But what else they have there? A ticked-off Percy Harvin. I like Harvin's skills, but there always seems to be a but when it comes to him. Rudolph needs to step it up at tight end. You know, I don't know. The offensive line hasn't exactly been protecting him in the preseason, but I think that'll improve enough. And I think Ponder's going to improve enough to be a borderline number two fantasy football quarterback, but he's not going to be anything more than that this year.
Yeah, and Kyle Rudolph now undergoing examination for concussion, so
yeah.
Something to keep an eye on there. Jerome Simpson, Ross, is a guy that I really like. I don't know if you saw the game last night or the other night. He had another one of these razzle-dazzle jumping over the guys. We all remember the play where he flipped over the guy last year. Had another athletic play in preseason. I think this guy, I'm just going to go on the record and say he's the most underdrafted player in fantasy football leagues. I think he's the number one guy in Minnesota. I think he leads the team in receiving. I think Percy Harvin is always going to eventually get hurt at some point in the season. And I know if you draft Jerome Simpson, which a lot of people are shying away from because of that three-game suspension, you know, if you take the whole season into account and look at it as a whole, big deal. You know, you can get this guy in a 12th, 14th, 16th round possibly, and this guy could potentially be a number one wide receiver on his team. I think this is a great midseason boost addition to your team. You heard it here first. Most underdrafted player in fantasy football leagues, what do you say?
Well, look, I think he's going to contribute. I don't know how underdrafted he's going to be. It's 725 yards and 4 touchdowns last year. And look, he's missing 3 games. I think those numbers will probably be what he does this year. He's in a very weak offense. I don't see him breaking out. But as you said, I would like to take a risk on a guy like that. Once I filled out my team, you can have a guy on your bench who, when he does start to play, or even pick him up off the waiver wire in week 2 or 3, once he does start to play and does start to acclimate himself and produces, people will be like, why isn't he on the waiver wire? Oh, because that guy drafted him with his last pick or second to last pick. But you don't want to rely on him. I mean, I don't think you want him to be a third receiver that you have to play in a bye week. I just don't see that offense as producing that much to warrant anything less than a let me keep him and see if he does performs a miracle in week 8, 9, or 10 when I need him on my bye week. But other than that, I don't know. I don't see a bust-out player on that offense.
I think Simpson's a legitimate sleeper. I know. I think that he was playing in A.J. Green's shadow last year. I think Green missed about 3 games last year, And in those three games, I mean, Jerome Simpson put up some nice yardage, put up some good numbers.
Yes,
so I think he's a legitimate sleeper.
And you also got to take into consideration, I mean, if you look at his resume, if you look at the back of the football card, I mean, here's a guy who went from one catch in his rookie season, was pretty much non-existent, to his second season where he caught 20 balls, averaged 14 yards a catch, and then his third year, last year, semi-breakout, I mean, he goes from 20 catches to 50 catches. He goes from 300 yards to 700 yards. You know, I think Jerome Simpson takes the next step here, and I think 900 yards and 6 or 7 touchdowns is realistic, minus, you know, plus missing those three games. I think Jerome Simpson could have a heck of a season, and I think he could be had very late, considering where he's being drafted in most fantasy football drafts. You know, another guy that you can have late is Toby Gerhart. I mean, this is a guy that I would not mind rolling the dice on just because we don't know about Adrian Peterson all day. I don't know. I mean, you know, everything you hear, everything he says, everything you read, you want to believe that he's on target to be this, you know, monster in fantasy football again this year, but I don't know if I'm all in. I don't know if I'm buying the whole deal, and I think Toby Gerhart, whether Adrian Peterson is 100% or not, I can see Toby Gerhart getting 10 to 15 touches a week. How do you see it, Ross? What do you expect from this Minnesota Vikings running back scenario?
Yeah, I'm sort of with you on this one, Rick. Look, AD is a fast healer. He's a tough guy. But despite the fact that he could play in week one, I doubt he will play. And if he does, he'll probably get a handful of touches and be eased back into the bell cow role. But while he is, look, Toby Gerhart is going to get the bulk of the touches. 21 touches is what he averages when starting for Peterson, and he's done a pretty good job when he's been asked. I wouldn't draft Peterson in my top 20 overall. I think he's on the borderline of top 10 running backs. It's just too risky until he's playing his normal role. And Gerhart, to me, right now, week one is a solid flex play until Peterson proves he's going to handle 20 carries, and I don't know that that's going to happen. I think Gerhart, 7th or 8th round, I don't think that's too high.
All right, you're listening to the Fantasy Football Insiders Radio Show. Rick, Ralph, and Ross, the Triple R Connection, breaking it down for the people now. Can't stop, won't stop. 2 hours commercial free. You know what? We're going to take a little 30-second break. It ain't going to be a commercial. It's just for people like me battling the cold. Blow your nose a little bit. If you like Tim Tebow, drink a little Jesus juice. But you got 37 seconds to do it. Fantasy Football Insiders Radio. Woo! You know how we do it each and every Sunday morning during the regular season. 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, followed by the Fantasy Taz, who's holding it down in the chat room right now, along with rookie draft Joe Everett. We've got Aces Up. Sealy 4, I'm hoping that segment booms. Chicago Bears, Chairs. Always good to see him. G Money, Mark SD. Welcome to the show. Snake Eyes, longtime listener. So let's do this, guys. Let's get into the NFC South. We covered the East. We covered the North. And a lot of people expecting the Atlanta Falcons to take that next step this season. You know, we saw a lot of potential with these Atlanta Falcons, but kind of, you know, not able to turn the corner. And I think it's going to start right up at top with Matt Ryan. Everybody looking for him to take the next step. The team has surrounded him with weapons. Of course, going out and getting Julio Jones last season. You know, he had somewhere around mid to late 20 touchdown passes, but high expectations for Atlanta this season, Ralph. I'm going to throw it right out there right now. We've all liked Matt Ryan since his BC days. I'm going to throw out a number, 34.5 touchdowns. You taking the over or you taking the under?
I'm going to take the over. I like what I've seen out of Ryan thus far. He looks quicker. He's getting rid of the ball in less time. And I love his weapons. And obviously, I think, you know, the new offensive coordinator, Dirk Cutter, is making a difference in Hotlanta. I say Matty Ice throws about 36 touchdowns if he stays healthy. And, you know, odds are he will stay healthy and play 16 games. He's only missed two games in his career. So I like what I've seen out of Matt Ryan. He looks like a different quarterback to me.
Well, a lot of people like what they've seen out of Julio Jones, in the house. Some people thinking he might even take the next step and exceed and surpass Roddy White as the go-to guy. 36 touchdowns, Rev. You're putting your name out there on the line. That's a lot of touchdown balls to go around. Who's going to catch more of them, Jones or White?
This is a real tough question. Both are terrific receivers, and I want both of them on my fantasy team. Look, White is ahead of Jones in terms of his experience and playing with Matt Ryan. He's ahead of him in terms of setting up defenders and overall timing. However, Jones is the bigger, faster player. And if you take a look at his performance last year, he had touchdowns of 80, 75, 50, and 48 yards. Roddy White hasn't recorded any receptions for that amount of yards in the past 2 years. So Jones is definitely the big play guy. He is a physical beast. He looks like a young Terrell Owens. I think he's going to put up more yards and more touchdowns. You know, White could record a couple of more catches, but I'm going to take Julio Jones.
It's a bold statement, but I believe in it. But I want to get a third opinion. Ross, are you buying the whole Julio Jones over Roddy Piper scenario?
I absolutely am. Listen, to me, I have Julio Jones ranked as my fourth receiver. I have Roddy White as my 10th.
Wow.
Either one of them is going to be useful as a starter. I'd rather have Jones, as Rev mentioned. He has a little bit of extra size. And what I thought was interesting is he was finally being targeted in the red zone, which he really wasn't last year. I think he can add that to his list of attributes. To me, it all depends on how much wealth is going to be spread, and I am surprised that Rev and I are on the same page. I love Matt Ryan this year. I have the over in that scenario you had. Look, the Falcons finally get it. 2010, 55% pass plays, 20th in the league. Last year, 58% pass plays, 16th. They're going to be over 60% pass plays this year, which will put them in the top 10. It will benefit everyone on that team. It's enough Michael Turner. Let's use the wide receivers. And Jacquizz Rodgers.
Dropping knowledge on him. And let's talk about Jacquizz Rodgers, Rev, because, you know, the Falcons have been pretty publicly outstated, saying that they want to decrease the role of Michael Turner, kind of ease up on the workload there. And Jacquizz seems to be the man in line. Compared as a poor man's Darren Sproles, why has he got to be a poor man? This kid can do it all. You buying or selling Jacquizz Rodgers as a fantasy football flex position?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. For a minute there, I thought you were going to say as a number one or number two. No, I am buying Quiz as a number three or flex back. Look, the Falcons, they want to play a high-tempo style of ball under new offensive coordinator Dick Cutter. And that means there needs to be a better passing team. Michael Turner, he's slowing down. He's just not as quick to the hole as he used to be. I'm not saying Turner is useless, but Rodgers is going to play a major role in that offense. You know, in fact, you know, the head coach, Mike Smith, he already came out and said that Quiz is going to be a three-down back, not just a change-of-pace guy.
Hey.
So Rodgers, he's not only elusive, but he can break some tackles. So I think he's a little bit different from Sproles because even though he's short, maybe 5'5", 5'6", I think he's a little bigger, a little sturdier than Darren Sproles. And I'm looking for, and I'm being conservative here, I'm looking for about 11 to 12 touches a game and probably over 1,000 total yards rushing and receiving for Jacquizz Rodgers. Now, he could definitely do better than that, but I'm going to be conservative and I'm going to forecast those types of numbers.
Well, that would be a pretty impressive season if he accumulated 1,000 total yards, maybe 5 or 6 touchdowns, but definitely a valuable chip, especially in deeper fantasy football leagues. That is Jacquizz Rodgers, maybe not on everybody's fantasy football radar, but certainly on ours. And Ross, a guy that's on my radar, without a doubt, as we transition into Carolina, is Brandon LaFell. I mean, I liked the flashes I saw last season. I think, you know, he was kind of still getting a feel for the whole NFL game. I think this year he kind of steps up and plays that go-to guy opposite of Steve Smith in Carolina. Given Killer Cam a legitimate number two wide receiver, I'm thinking 7 or 8-plus touchdowns for Brandon LaFell.
That's funny, Rick. That's exactly what I have down for him. Look, Cam Newton's going to run the ball a lot less this year. To me, that means there's going to be more passing the ball. LaFell is the number two behind Smith. I don't want to hear about Geddes. You know, Greg Olsen's going to clear out space. He's going to get his share of touches as well, Jersey. But LaFell and Newton, to me, they've been clicking in the preseason. I see no reason LaFell can't grab 7 or 8 touchdowns and approach 800-900 yards. There's even more there for him if he would ever go over the middle. And you know, I don't want to sell Geddes short. I think there's room for him to contribute as well. But for me, LaFell is the number two guy there, and I've loved him from day one, so I'm ready for it.
You know, you mentioned Cam Newton ran the ball an awful lot last year, was just a beast in terms of total touchdowns, passing, and rushing the ball. I mean, you know, I'm not sure I ever saw a rookie quarterback performance like this ever in the history of the NFL. I can't think of one myself.
14 rushing touchdowns, that's sick.
Yeah, I mean, it was something like a phenomenon. Is it possible that this kid can have a repeat performance? I mean, is that doable? Are you buying or selling that theory?
I don't think he's going to repeat. There's no way he's rushing for 14 touchdowns again. They just can't afford to have him do that at this point. But I think he had 35 total touchdowns. I think that is going to stay around the same. Maybe he may even increase that a little, but it'll be on the passing end. I think the interceptions scare me to death. So enough for me. I don't have him in my top 5 quarterbacks, but he certainly is exciting. Don't overdraft him because of the 14 touchdowns he had on the ground last year. That is simply not going to happen again.
Where exactly does he shake out in your quarterback rankings, Ross?
I have him 6.
Okay. So knocking on the door of that top 5.
Yes, but I'm a little wary of the turnovers. More passing, more turnovers.
All right, let's dissect this running back situation a little bit because, you know, they signed D'Angelo Williams to a long-term deal a couple years ago. Then they rewarded Jonathan Stewart, a.k.a. Turf Toe Johnny, with the long-term deal. Then they went out and signed Mike Tolbert in the free agency. But
who else?
They got this undrafted free agent gem by the name of...
Take a swim in the pool?
Torin Poole is just kind of tearing it up now, and they're saying long-term this kid might actually emerge as the number one back in Carolina.
So he's this year's Jalen Parmalee? Or Jacob Hester? Look, this kid's got very quick feet. He could receive the ball well. But I don't know, man. I don't see the burst from him. And to me, he's not a guy who makes you say wow in any one area, though he's consistent in pretty much everything. He is usable. I don't have a problem with that. And he did get downgraded because of his poor senior year, but to me it was shocking he went undrafted. He's a little inconsistent. You know, he's sidelined with a concussion already after looking good in the first preseason game. There's just too many other running backs to spend a pick on unless you're in a dynasty league to me. Even though Poole may end up getting a shot at some point, I don't think it's going to be in Carolina with what's in front of him. And then it's a matter of where he ends up and what system he's in and whether he can acclimate. And before you know it, the guy's 28 years old. I mean, it's all a matter of landing in the right spot, and I just don't think he's in it right now.
Well, you know, they once said the same things about another undrafted free agent running back out of the University of Tennessee. His name was Arian Foster.
Well, he got badmouthed.
And Torin Poole is looking to follow in the footsteps. If you are in a dynasty league, like Ross said, you know, definitely a name worth, you know, throwing out there, maybe, you know, stashing on your practice squad, your rookie squad, touring pool, could probably pick him up for a dollar. You know, who knows? Long term, this kid, you know, we saw what Arian Foster did. Who knows? You never know, but definitely a name worth monitoring. That's how we break it down here on the Fantasy Football Insiders radio show. Not giving you all the mainstream news and notes, but, you know, dissecting some of those bottom feeder players on the roster, you know, the 53rd, the 54th, the 55th man on the roster. You got to talk about those players, too, because, you know, you just never know where the next Arian Foster lurks. Ralph and... You know what? It's time to talk about those Nolan Saints. Who that? Who that? You know,
Roger Goodell.
We mentioned earlier the Super Bowl is in New Orleans. Wouldn't it be something if the Saints went to the Super Bowl and Roger Goodell had to award the trophy to Tom Benson in New Orleans? I mean, what a sight that would be.
Yeah.
But we're not there just yet, Ralph. Let's take it one step at a time. We saw superstar Jimmy Graham, who you and Ross were all over before the season last year. The big debate now is he legitimately the number one tight end worth drafting? Do you take Jimmy Graham over a Rob Gronkowski like so many fantasy football owners are debating in their heads?
Yeah, I think I do like Graham as the number one tight end. And it's simple math. I mean, you take a look at New Orleans, and, you know, they lost Robert Meacham from the passing game, and they have Marquise Colston there, who's playing on a pair of creaky knees. Then you take a look at the Pats, and they've added Brandon Lloyd, Jabari Gaffney to their arsenal, and Tom Brady has an embarrassment of riches to throw the ball to. And so I think just by virtue of the fact that he's got so much talent around him, I think – there's going to be a slight drop-off to Gronkowski's numbers. By the same token, I think Graham is a guy that is just going to keep on getting better. He's a field stretcher. He's not afraid of contact. And the thing that I like about him is the fact that he does play with Drew Brees. Drew Brees will keep him in line if he starts losing his edge. So I'm going to go Graham and then Gronko.
Okay. Very valid points. You know, both are studs, and I can't remember in a long time that I ever saw a pair of tight ends getting drafted as high as Jimmy Superstar Graham and the Gronk. So either way, you can't lose with either one of those guys. But let's talk about those New Orleans Saints wide receivers that you mentioned, Ralph. I mean, after Marcus Colston, you know, Drew Brees threw for something crazy, like 5,000 yards, amazing last year.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's going to be some value in Saints wide receivers. How do you break it all down after Colston?
Well, we know that Lance Moore is steady, and he's got a great rapport with Drew Brees. Inside the 10-yard line, Moore was 7 of 10. He caught 7 of 10 passes last year. So I think that, you know, if you extrapolate those stats, I think he's going to be good for about maybe 800 to 900 yards, 7 to 8 touchdowns. Which, you know, if you have him as a number three or number four receiver, you know, that's pretty sweet. You take a look at some of the other receivers. You got Devery Henderson there. He's going to get some extra looks with Robert Meacham in San Diego. Look, Henderson is mainly a feast or famine deep threat, but he has produced when other receivers have gone down with injuries. So he might be useful here and there, maybe as a bye week guy. Then they also have a few young guys who are emerging. Joseph Morgan, he's a second-year player. He's a guy that you need to watch. He's a more disciplined guy than he was last year. And he's been on the receiving end of some big plays in the preseason. And then, of course, you got Nick Toon. You got Adrian Arrington. They just signed Greg Camarillo also, by the way.
Yeah.
But to me, I think, you know, after Colston, and I'm not sold on Colston because of those creaky knees that I talked about before. But after Colston, I think the guy that I probably want is Lance Moore. Nothing exciting about him, but you know what you're going to get. And then if you're looking for upside, obviously, I don't know. I've seen a lot out of this guy, Joe Morgan, that, you know, kind of intrigues me a little bit.
Yeah, Joe Morgan, you know, could give Devery Henderson a run for his money there. You know, Devery Henderson had a touchdown the other day. I know that. Finally, with the Saints, let's talk about this Mark Ingram, Ralph, because here's a guy, you know, people seem scared to touch him in fantasy football drafts amongst the starting running backs around the league, which he's pegged for. I see this guy as one of the last starting running backs selected in fantasy football drafts. People just aren't sold on the knees, as you mentioned with Colston. But, I mean, when the guy plays, he seems to produce. He seems to have a knack for the end zone. Are you buying or selling Mark Ingram this year?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not 100% sold on him. You know, when New Orleans traded up for Ingram in the first round, many people expected him to consistently put up about 1,200 to 1,300 yards and double-digit touchdowns. And while I love him at Bama, and he's got great running instincts, he's stuck in a three-man running back rotation with Pierre Thomas and Darren Sproles, with the sprinkling of Chris Ivory, and even Jed Collins stealing a few goal-line carries. And then if you've watched, you know, any of their preseason games, you also had Travaris Cadet, who's also made some noise.
Oh, outstanding.
Yeah, and so,
That kid is a player.
Those athletic kids can play, man.
And the other problem with Ingram is he doesn't catch many passes. That's not his game. Plus, he's not very fast. You know, both Thomas and Sproles had a higher yards per carry in 2011. You take all those factors into consideration, and I'm not buying on Mark Ingram. I mean, to me, he deserves to be a guy that you pick in the later rounds. You said, what, 13th, 14th, 15th round? To me, he's not a number one, number two, or number three back. Just because they have too many mouths to feed in New Orleans, and then you have those other factors that I mentioned as well.
Let me ask you this question, guys. What has Mark Ingram done as a professional to show you that he's anything other than a poor man's Pierre Thomas?
That's a little hard.
At times he's shown you signs of it, but then just, you know, as he's about to have a good game, he gets hurt. You know, and that's what happened in the Indianapolis game last year. And so, we haven't seen enough out of him, and I think he's in a bad situation from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, it was a wasted pick, man. Thomas does everything he does. They could have used that pick on defense.
It's hard to argue that statement. I mean, Pierre Thomas, Darren Sproles are obviously the better receivers out of the backfield. That kid, Travaris Cadet, I mean, at Appalachian State, boy, if the Saints cut that kid, they're making a huge mistake because he's going to latch on somewhere and be a player. But now you throw Cadet into the mix in the backfield with the Saints. I don't know. Mark Ingram is looking less and less enticing. But then again, I mean, if you get him in the 15th to 16th round, it's kind of a good upside pick. So, you know, is he going where he belongs? I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence, but the Rev is not buying, and Ross obviously is not buying. So there you have it on Mark Ingram. Let's talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers now and round out the NFC South. I don't know what you guys think, but I really like what Greg Schiano is doing down in Tampa. I honestly believe he's going to be a very solid head football coach. Some people might disagree. What do you say, Ross?
I'm with you. You know, I think that unlike baseball's Red Sox, the Tampa Bay saw a disorganized team in need of someone to right the ship, and I think they brought the right guy in. You know, this team now will be disciplined. They will have a structure. They will know what they're supposed to do. And, you know, for all players complaining, I think they need it, and I think they like it. And I think players like Josh Freeman are going to perform better as a result of the new Greg Schiano discipline and structure.
Well, you mentioned
Josh. Yeah, I agree. It was never a question of talent with this team.
Nope.
They had talent last year. It was just a lot of penalties, a lot of turnovers. So they needed somebody to come in there and command some respect.
Yeah, I just think they were completely disorganized, and now they're not. You know, Schiano will get them running a tight ship there. They have a decent schedule in the right direction. I think they're going to be fine.
And you mentioned Josh Freeman, who I think is going to be a candidate for the Most Improved Player of the Year award. What do you think of that?
I really don't have a problem with you saying that. I think he's got the skill. I just wonder about his accuracy. But I think he's certainly going to be markedly better than he was last year. But it'd be hard not to be.
And, you know, we saw what Shiano did in Rutgers, obviously right here in our own backyard in Jersey. This guy, you know, Rex Ryan likes to talk about ground and pound. He talks about it. Greg Schiano bees about it. They selected Doug Martin in the first round. They got another guy from Utah, Michael Smith, and plus LeGarrette Blount is in the mix. They almost went after Jeff Demp. So Greg Schiano is all about running the football. The question is, did he get his Ray Rice in Doug Martin?
Well, he very well might have. You know, similar stature, similar size, similar weight. To me, Martin's a 1,000-yard rusher as a rookie in the Schiano system. He's going to have plenty of opportunity. He's, to me, he's a vastly, vastly more complete back when compared to LeGarrette Blount, who to me is already banged up. And, you know, he's got a lot of holes in his game, which is why he is what he is. I think, look, the bottom, there's going to be a little bit of a timeshare to start with, so I wouldn't overdraft Martin. You know, remember, going with that Rice comparison, Rice had just over 700 total yards in his rookie season. So don't sell the farm for Martin here. But to me, he's a solid number two running back, I think, with potential for more. If you're willing to roll the dice, he could definitely be that guy.
Well, I believe Martin will be a more productive fantasy football player than Trent Richardson.
I don't think there's any question.
Okay. Well, that's there you go. I mean, hey. 3 for 3, Doug Martin over Trent Richardson. Let's talk a little NFC West football. You know, I saw some of the preseason game the other night with the 49ers. Randy Moss caught 3 balls. Nothing spectacular, little short dink and dunks. But, you know, the potential's there. This guy, we don't know. Only he knows how motivated he truly is. Is Randy Moss real, or is this a mirage out by the bay, Ross?
Yeah, as Bugs Bunny would say, it's a mirage. You know, I'm not buying it. 25 snaps, they're saying he's going to get on offense, you know, in an offense that's hardly pass-happy. And this is a guy who didn't play well in 2011, had less than 400 yards in 2010. Come on now. I mean, the motivation has always been the issue with this guy. And how motivated is he going to be when he's not the guy, let alone might not even be starting in a wide receiver committee? You're going to overdraft him. To me, he's a fourth wide receiver on your fantasy team, but he's going to be way overdrafted to me. I'm not buying him at all this year.
Well, the 49ers did go out and spend big bucks on Mario Manningham, who was really nothing more than a third wideout with the Giants. Here's a guy, you know, he caught 39 balls last year for 523 yards, never been a 1,000-yard receiver. You know, 49ers shelled out some big bucks to him. I mean, is he the number one wide receiver on this team? Are you buying or selling Mario Manningham as a legitimate fantasy football threat?
Well, you know, the guy signed a two-year $7 million-plus contract there, $3.2 million guaranteed. That's not a lot. But my question is, why in the world would Mario Manningham go here? I don't get it. It's a run-first offense with an average quarterback, and Manningham knows he's not a number one guy. He's going to be thrown into the mix with a bunch of other guys. It's a far cry from his 2010 season when he had 944 yards and 9 touchdowns with Eli Manning. Alex Smith, you know, the master of the West Coast offense now, according to his coaches, but not him. He's just not going to put up numbers like Eli Manning's putting up. To me, Manningham is a low-end number three. But to me, that's more than Randy Moss. So I'd take Manningham before Moss for sure.
Yeah, I'd take Manningham over Moss myself. You know, Moss is a guy that, you know, he'll give you flashes here and there. But let's go back to the last time he played 2 years ago, even 3 years ago. You know, here's a guy who every once in a while shows you, you know, that greatness that's going to make him a Hall of Famer one day. But then he also has these periods of nothing, you know. So I like Manningham, and I like Crabtree over Moss. I like both those guys over Moss.
Yeah. Well, where do we go? Where does Crabtree fit in the pecking order? Do you take Crabtree over Manningham?
I would take Crabtree over Manningham, but it's very close.
Yeah, that's, it's either or. It's very close. Probably Crabtree just because I think he's probably like a bigger guy who goes across the middle. He could be more of your Anquan Boldin type of possession guy, whereas Manningham, he's more of a speed guy and a guy that's a little bit more fragile. But actually, both of those guys are pretty fragile. But I think I'd give the edge to Crabtree.
All right, well, we talk about all these potential weapons the 49ers have. You got Moss, you got Manningham, you got Crabtree. They drafted A.J. Jenkins in the first round, and, of course, Vernon Davis. I mean, Ross, Alex Smith has to improve, can he? I mean, how many touchdowns can he go for?
No, I think we're looking, you know, 23, 24 max here, 10 interceptions. I mean, the guy averaged fewer than 200 passing yards a game last year, 17 touchdowns. The guy played every
game. But he has the mentor, Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, I'm glad he has a mentor. The mentor knows, let's not go crazy throwing the ball. I happen to think that this team is going to be very disappointing this season.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're saying no playoffs?
Well, in that division, I won't go that far. I think they win 9 games and are out first round.
Really? What, you got anything to say about that, Rev?
Yeah. Well, you know, to me, they played a lot of close games. They got a lot of turnovers last year, and I don't see both those things repeating themselves this year. But, Rev, make the case.
Well, no, I mean, look, I hear what you're saying, and it makes a lot of sense, but I think that defense is too strong, and I think that Alex Smith, I think he can get better. Not that much better, but, you know, he could be good enough to get you 25 to 26 touchdowns. And, you know, what I do like is I love their running game. I think Kendall Hunter is going to be the guy who's going to be the number one running back there in San Francisco. I think they're good for about 10 wins at least. I'm going to go 10 wins, and I think they take that division. I think they're still a powerhouse.
And they added LaMichael James in the backfield. I know Brandon Jacobs got injured, but a lot of people are saying that the 49ers defense is number one in the league. I don't know.
We'll see. Last year they got every possible bounce they could get. Those things don't happen every year. We'll see.
Oh, just like they got every bounce in that Giants game?
Well, I'm talking about regular season, man.
Oh, okay.
No, they certainly didn't get every bounce in the Giant game because the playoffs is where the real teams step up and make their breaks, baby.
Well, Ross.
Okay.
But you would know that.
You need luck on your
side.
You need lady luck on your side too. That's always a factor.
Well, you got Rex Ryan on your side.
Ross,
not my buddy.
Ross is not buying the 49ers, and if any other team is going to win that division, Ralph, I would believe it's the Seattle Seahawks, who, you know, pretty much said Tavarius Jackson is not going to play another down for us. Period. So the starting quarterback battle becomes a two-man race. And while you might say Russell Wilson's a rookie and you might be quick to count him out, not so fast, my friend. Pete Carroll loves this kid.
Mm-hmm.
How much of a legitimate chance does he have to overseat Matt Flynn?
Well, look, if it were up to me, I'd make Wilson the starter right now. But, again, I'm not coaching the team. Look, Flynn has looked okay in the preseason. He hasn't really thrown the ball down the field, though. You know, in his last game versus Denver, he averaged 2.4 yards per attempt. So, from the looks of things, I think Seattle is preparing Flynn to be the starter in a few weeks. But, as I said, Wilson is the best quarterback on the roster. Wilson is not afraid to stick the ball to tight spots. And that's because he has the arm to make those stick throws. I think that Wilson will be the starter at some point this season. You know, the guy I can compare him to is Michael Vick. But the one difference between Wilson and Vick is, you know, Wilson is a guy who works harder. I think he's a guy that wants it more. You take a look at Michael Vick when he was a young guy with the Falcons. He's a guy that never looked at any film. You know, he took his speed and his skills for granted. I think Wilson is a guy that's got a better head on his shoulders. He's a very intelligent kid, and he's very competitive. He wants it. I think the upside is just too much to keep this kid on the bench. I think Flynn starts the season, but I think eventually Wilson's going to start some games.
Flynn starts, Wilson finishes. Not sure if the same could be said for T.O., Terrell Owens dropping a 46-yard touchdown pass perfectly placed right through the fingertips, Ralph. First off, does he even – I mean, I asked the question about Randy Moss if he's real or mirage. I think Randy Moss has secured a roster spot. I don't know if T.O. has.
You're right. He's not guaranteed a roster spot. And he didn't capitalize on some opportunities in Saturday night's game versus Denver. But in T.O.'s defense, Pete Carroll, you know, he did say that T.O. has been on point in practice. He's worked hard. He's made plays in practice. And, you know, on two of those plays versus Denver the other night, you know, Matt Flynn underthrew him, you know. So I think T.O. can still play, especially on a team full of young receivers. In addition, you know, the Seahawks, they can't count on Sidney Rice, and that's why they brought in Braylon Edwards. That's why they brought in Terrell Owens. I think Terrell Owens can still help the team. I think what's going to be key is he's got to know his role. He's got to keep his mouth shut. And I think he can do that because, you know, when he went to Buffalo, he was pretty much a good Boy Scout. So this is his last chance to, you know, to do anything of consequence in the NFL. So he's got to have another good preseason game. If he puts up a good performance in his next preseason game, I think he'll probably make the team. But as I said, he's not guaranteed a roster spot. In terms of fantasy, he's no more than a number five receiver, in my opinion.
Well, you talk about the shaky wide receiver corps in Seattle. Doug Baldwin, I do believe, was the first ever undrafted rookie free agent to lead his team in receiving. Was that a product of just a weak wide receiver core, or is that a telltale sign of what we will see again this year in terms of Doug Baldwin? As funny as it sounds, being the number one guy in Seattle, are you buying or selling that statement?
I'm buying Doug Baldwin. You know, he's been dealing with some hammy issues in the preseason, but he's going to be ready once the lights go on. Baldwin is a heavy slot man. He finds holes in the defense. And, you know, although he's like more of a slot guy more than anything else, he's got the tools to make downfield plays. Fantasy-wise, I think he'll be a quality wide receiver three, maybe even an excellent wide receiver four. But I think that Doug Baldwin has tremendous upside, and I think he's a keeper. I think he's good.
Yeah, I like Doug Baldwin myself. I think he's a legitimate, especially in PPR, I think this guy has something to offer. I'm a big fan of Doug Baldwin. I think this is another guy going very late in rounds, very late in drafts. He could be a steal, Doug Baldwin, no doubt about it.
What about Rev's boy, Golden Tate?
When did he become my boy, by the way? I wanted to bust on you. When did I ever profess my love for Golden Tate?
I was joking around. I know you're down on him.
Look, he's got some ability, but he's very much unproven. And, you know, it's another big year for Golden Tate, too, by the way. If he doesn't step up this year, I think he's out.
Make or break, for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know, man. You could get odds on anybody being their two starting wide receivers to start the season. I mean, I don't know what's going on there.
Well, I think Baldwin looks pretty solid after that. The rest remains to be seen. As for the St. Louis Rams, lot remains to be seen. And, you know, I read all these positive reports about what a good game Brian Schottenheimer called the other day, and Sam Bradford's really going to thrive under this new offense. I mean, it's amazing to me that this guy got another job in the NFL. I can't believe it, but let me ask somebody else. Ross, do you think this is a positive or negative for Sam Bradford with Brian Schottenheimer calling the plays?
Well, I think it's a positive, but, you know, look, Schottenheimer, they're concentrating on shorter passes, making Bradford take fewer hits, fewer sacks, giving him a little more confidence after his dreadful sophomore year.
In other words, conservative.
Yeah, but what are we really talking about here? This is Bradford's third year, and, you know, he regressed in the second year. You know, they brought in, you know, another Jersey Rutgers guy, Frank Sinietti, as a quarterback coach, so he has a position coach this year as opposed to Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, he also has three different offensive coordinators in three seasons.
Absolutely. You know, we're falling to the Jason Campbell category here. Look, Cignetti is an up-close and personal guy, but I don't know. You know, a new offensive coordinator and special attention can only help so much. There's not a lot of talent in my book for Bradford or Schottenheimer to rely on here. Danny Amendola, a rejuvenated Steve Smith. There's a lot of buzz, but I need to see Steve Smith do it in an actual game like he did with the New York Giants. You know, Denario Alexander's banged up. Brandon Gibson, Greg Salas, are these reliable guys? I don't think so. I mean, there is one guy I like long-term, Rick. I know you're going to mention him. So, you know, I'll lead you right into Brian Quick.
Well, you're buying or selling. I mean, the Appalachian State kid, we hear so much about his potential small school prospect. I, you know, see a lot of these small school wide receivers. They come in and do legats. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I like him long term. You know, 6'4", 220, he's got great size, but it's going to take him time. You know, as you would expect for a guy from App State at wide receiver, he's struggling in his route running a little bit. He's lacking a little bit of a burst coming out of his break, but I think that's something he'll learn. And I'd put it right now, invest in it. He's going to be their number one guy in 2013. But this year might be a little bit of a struggle. Well, that's not saying a lot on that team.
I haven't heard the name Lance Kendricks. Is this the year when the light goes on for him?
Yeah, you know, I saw him make some plays the other night.
I don't know. I worry that team is going to be so conservative that they're going to end up doing exactly what they don't want to do, and that's going three and out every time. You know, what are they getting? Handoff, incomplete, punt?
You know what worries me is Sam Bradford was already complaining about ankle pain, and to me, I don't even think he'll last the season. He's very fragile, and once he goes down, what are you left with? Kellen Clemens, that quarterback?
You know, he's Shoddy's best friend, right? They should both be playing in Canada. Look, I think Bradford's going to toughen up a little bit this year. I think he'll play. I think Fisher knows the deal. He knows Bradford's got to be the guy. So they're going to do whatever they can do to help him learn as the team gets better and try not to get him killed. I think that's the object of this season, Fisher's first.
Yeah, simply mind-boggling, and in case you didn't hear me, mind-boggling that they didn't upgrade that wide receiver. Brian Quick, Steve Smith. That's the best you can do. I mean, where's Donnie Avery when you need him? but there is one kid making some noise, drawing a lot of high praise from Jeff Fisher. And you know what? Maybe he doesn't do his damage this year entirely, but definitely worth the handcuff. I know one league I was forced, unfortunately, because he was the best option available, I was forced to draft Steven Jackson in one of my leagues. I made sure I got Isaiah Pede in the later round. This kid can bring it. I mean, how fast until he becomes the man in St. Louis, Ross?
Yes, please, if you're in a dynasty league or even if you have a big bench. He's still a little raw. You know, he missed some practice because I think Cincinnati's graduation date is like August or something, so he couldn't come to the team. But he's been impressive since his initial struggles to catch up a little bit. He's a complete back. He blocks. If you block, coach is going to love you. He receives well, in addition to having serious running skills. I mean, Coach Fisher's going to love this guy. He's a physical style of running. And in the Schottenheimer offense, that suits him very well. I think Pete's going to see touches. And I think he's a must-have. If you have Steven Jackson, you better get this guy because they're not going to overwork Steven Jackson. And as we mentioned, they're going to have a conservative offense. So I think there's going to be a lot of dump-off passing and a lot of running. And that means that Mr. Pede's going to see a few touches, I think. I love him, and I love him for 2013, too.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't use a second-round pick on this kid for nothing. So, I mean, like you said, Ross, Dynasty League especially, Isaiah Pede definitely worth snatching up. Steven Jackson on the wrong side of 30. Not many starting running backs. 30-year-old plus. I know Michael Turner, Steven Jackson. I dare you to go find me another starting running back over the age of 30. I don't know if there is one. So
Fred Jackson.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Is he up there? Is he on the other side of 30?
31.
I don't know.
Fred Jackson's over 30, yeah.
Well, okay. So, you know, not too many of those guys around. Isaiah Pede could be an X factor sooner rather than later. Another guy who I think could be an X factor, as we covered the last 16 of 16 teams, Ralph, right up the block, the kid from Fordham. I mean, John Skelton fits this offense like a sleeve. You talk about a cannon arm. I can't imagine Kevin Cobb would be better. I mean, Skelton can air it out and hit Fitzgerald, Michael Floyd. Taylor built for this offense in terms of throwing the deep ball. How do you see the quarterback situation playing out? Kevin Cobb seems to be corn on the cob. I mean, this kid looks like a disaster.
Yeah.
Is it Skelton's job?
Kevin Cobb's made a lot of guys look bad, a guy that was highly touted a few years ago. Look, it's hard to evaluate quarterbacks taking snaps behind a bad offensive line, and now their left tackle is going to be out, Levi Brown, for an extended period. But, look, Cobb is just plain awful. I mean, the guy melts under pressure. He still makes rookie mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as Skelton goes, you know, he's going to throw his picks too. But the guy is huge. He's as big as Ben Roethlisberger. He's not afraid to make stick throws. And Larry Fitzgerald's chances of success improved dramatically with Skelton under center. But the guy to keep an eye on is Ryan Lindley. Now, Lindley's not going to, I don't think, you know, unless somebody gets hurt, I don't think Lindley's going to play this year. That's not the plan. But if he's available in your dynasty league, I would pick him up because he's looked terrific so far in training camp.
Yeah, interesting. You know, Kevin Cobb is pretty much, as Emmett Smith might say, debacled this job. And, you know, how ironic is it that Donovan McNabb is out there searching for a job? So wouldn't that be something if McNabb or McRib takes over for Cobb in Arizona? But that remains to be seen. You know, as far as I'm concerned, Dante Culpepper is better than Kevin Cobb at this point. But we mentioned Michael Floyd and the upside that he has. If a quarterback can get him the ball, some people think he might be the best rookie wide receiver to come out of the draft. Where do you see him shaking out in terms of fantasy football production, Rev? Is this guy a capable number two fantasy receiver on your team?
Well, I'm not going to tell you to make him your number two wide receiver. It's too early for that right now. He's off to a pretty slow start, but he has a better talent than both Early Doucette and Andre Roberts. I just wouldn't expect too much early on from Michael Floyd. The guy has to learn how to work. He's a guy who I think is going to start showing progress as the season goes on. But he's a legitimate talent, and I would definitely have him on my Dynasty League. And he's caught more passes in college than any other first-round wide receiver pick in the last 10 years. So you don't do that by accident. I think right now this year Floyd is more of a Dynasty League player, but I think in years to come, I think this guy could be a legitimate number one receiver.
Yeah, I mean, if he can make Jimmy Clausen look good, I'm sure he can mesh well with John Skelton. You know, I had an interesting debate earlier this week with one of the fantasy football owners in one of my leagues. You know, he winded up trading for Ryan Williams. I kind of laughed at him and, you know, told him Beanie Wells is the guy in my mind there. So, I mean, I guess this is a battle worth monitoring, Rev. Beanie Wells versus Ryan Williams. Who wins it? Who has more upside? Who's the guy you're selecting if you have to gun to your head, Beanie Wells or Ryan Williams?
Yeah, you said the magic words, gun to my head. That's the only way I would have these two guys on my fantasy team. But, you know, Ryan Williams, the second-year football player, running back, he's coming into his own so far. He authored a great performance versus Oakland the other night. He averaged 5 yards per carry, scored a touchdown. And the thing with Beanie Wells is Arizona is losing patience with him. He not only gets hurt a lot, but they feel like they have to push him all the time. So, but then again, both guys, they're both very fragile. You know, Williams is a guy, he's not very big. He tries to run like his idol, Walter Payton. So this is a guy who came into the league with durability issues, and chances are I don't think he's going to last long in the NFL, Ryan Williams. So maybe for this year, I think Ryan Williams has a bigger upside, but it's very close. I think Beanie Wells will have his moments, but again, he's going to break down at some point too. I'm not excited about any one of these two backs. I will tell you that they do have a nice big back there somewhere on the bench. His name is Alfonso Smith. I know they put him in there last year at some point, and he showed some signs. So, but right now, I think I'd go with Ryan Williams over Beanie Wells, but not by much.
All right. Well, you've been listening to the Fantasy Football Insiders radio show. We're going to be here live each and every week during the regular season, Sunday mornings, 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern time, followed by the Fantasy Taz show. So get on board with all that. Of course, you can check out our updates on NFLDraftBible.com. We do have our 2013 Big Board available for free. If you're interested, email us at media@NFLDraftBible.com. We'll send that out to you. And we got a little bit of time left over here. We get to go rapid-fire fantasy football pick'em. A couple scenarios I'm going to throw out at the fellas. They're going to tell me who they like more. And we're going to get a little debate going on here. So let's start it off at quarterback with our fantasy football pick'em. Rev, I'll kick it off with you. We talked about Jay Cutler this episode. Of course, if you want to listen to our AFC primer show, check out the archives where we talked about Joe Flacco. But for your money, who are you taking, Jay Cutler or Joe Flacco, sir?
I'll take Jay Cutler. You want a reason? I think Jay Cutler's the more athletic quarterback. I think he can make more plays when things break down around him. I like his weapons as well. I think he has more weapons than Joe Flacco in terms of his receivers. Joe Flacco is a guy who plays at a conservative offense with a conservative offensive coordinator. I think you got more upside with Jay Cutler.
Yeah. All right. Joe Flacco, Ross, one pass away from going to the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah. But I'd rather have Cutler this year. You know, look, with Cutler, it's addition and subtraction. He's got Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey, and he's got rid of Mike Martz. So to me, I think there's bad defenses in that division. That helps Cutler an awful lot. I think he's a borderline fantasy starter. I think Baltimore is going to be running the ball first. I don't like their offensive weapons as far as receivers go, and I think they have a harder schedule. So I'll take Cutler.
I'm going to go Joe Flacco here. I think Flacco, you could pencil in for 4,000 yards and 25 touchdowns. I don't think I could say that about Jay Cutler. I think, once again, he fails to survive the season. But let's go over and talk some running backs. Here's an interesting one, Ross. Willis McGahee or the law firm?
Yeah, you know, I was talking about exactly this thing with someone the other day. I'm not as high on the law firm as most people are. I don't like to draft guys who are on teams with an offense that I don't know. I don't know what that offense is going to be. I mean, maybe the Marvin Lewis offense, maybe he's going to run the ball all the time. I don't know. But for me, Willis McGahee is vastly underappreciated. And just because Peyton Manning's there, I don't think that means all of a sudden they're going to be throwing the ball 50 times a game. I mean, I think they could control the ball. I think that's what John Fox wants. And look, I don't want to get too deep into statistics, but the bottom line is, even when he was healthy for the last couple of years, Peyton Manning was not that good at throwing the ball deep down the field. So I think they're going to need the running game an awful lot. Peyton Manning's offenses run the ball inside the 10-yard line. I think McGahee is going to thrive, and I will take him over the law firm.
Denver did draft Ronnie Hillman. They did draft Ronnie Hillman. They got Lance Ball in the mix. Willis McGahee, maybe one of those running backs on the wrong side of 30. The law firm, Rev, I don't see why he can't pick up where Cedric Benson left off.
Listen, I have nothing against the law firm. He's a serviceable back. The problem is that he's never been a number one back. He's never been a foundation back with the New England Patriots. They're not about running the football. When he's coming to Cincinnati, they're expecting him to be that number one guy, because God knows Bernard Scott isn't. And to me, law firm hasn't proven that he could be that guy. I'm more confident in Willis McGahee. He has more of a track record, and obviously he plays with Peyton Manning. He's going to see a lot of goal line carries, so at the very least, you're going to see a lot of one-yard touchdowns from Mr. Willis McGahee.
Yeah, Yeah, I just think Green Ellis is going to find it that, you know, when you're not in New England, there aren't 13 or 11 touchdowns to be had like it's nothing.
Well, the Bengals' offense did surprise a lot last year. We'll see if they can surprise again. You know, the law firm does not fumble, so that's one positive that he has going for him. I'll throw out another running back scenario to you, Rev. If you were choosing between Donald Brown or Peyton Hillis, who do you like here?
This is a good question. I like both guys a lot. I'm going to go with Hillis by the nose just because Hillis is not the type of guy that is just a 250-pound back who's going to ram in a lot of touchdowns. He's a guy that can actually catch the ball. So he's a multidimensional guy. I like Kansas City to improve this year. I like their weapons on offense. I like that inside-outside combination with Jamaal Charles. I think he's going to have a healthy yards per carry average. So I just like Hillis a little bit more than Donald Brown, but I love Donald Brown as well. But I want to go with Hillis just by a nose.
Yeah, you mentioned Jamaal Charles in the mix there. Some people saying the Chiefs might have the best backfield in the NFL. Peyton Hillis sharing time with Jamaal Charles. Donald Brown, his starting job to lose with DeLon Carter in the mix. Ross, who do you like here, Donald Brown or Peyton Hillis?
Yeah, I like Peyton Hillis, and not by a little. I just think that Colts running game is a disaster. I'd avoid Brown. DeLon Carter, to me, better. There's other backs on that we discussed last week that I think are more useful in the Colts, the way the Colts are set up to run the ball than Donald Brown. I on the other hand, I love the running offensive line in Kansas City. I think Jamaal Charles, you know, he may feel 100%, but Hillis is going to get his touches, and he's going to be effective. And if you care about stuff like this, Hillis obviously in a contract year, he showed up to camp in great shape, and he's going to get the goal line carries to me. And I like him easily over Donald Brown.
All right, wide receiver question I'll throw out there. We spoke about Brandon Marshall earlier in the show. I'm going to throw this one out there to you, Ross. Brandon Marshall or A.J. Green? Who do you like more?
A.J. every day. Last year as a rookie, 1,057 yards, 7 touchdowns. Marshall has had 5 1,000-yard seasons in a row. That's nothing to sneeze at. And two of them were in a shaky Miami offense. Look, I love both guys as top 10 receivers, but I have Marshall at the bottom of that list. And to me, A.J. Green is a top 5 guy, man. Him and Julio Jones, I love him.
Rev.
I'm going to go with A.J. Green. Look, Brandon Marshall is a big physical guy. He can overpower cornerbacks. But A.J. Green has got a little bit more speed, a little bit more burst, a little bit more body control. This guy is a once-in-a-lifetime type of talent. I think his arrow is definitely pointing up. Again, I like both guys, as Ross said, but I'm going to go with A.J. Green here. I think he's a special, special player.
A lot of people high on that A.J. Green bandwagon, riding the train, steering the ship. Ross Stradamus, Ross Mandel, the good Reverend Ralph Mancini. I am Rick Servitelle. This has been Fantasy Football Insiders Podcast, NFC Primer. Of course, you can check out our AFC show on the archives. I want to thank everybody who listened to the AFC show, making us one of the most popular shows on Blog Talk Radio. Listeners have been way up, so I want to give a shout-out to all my chat room people. B-Love in the house. Good to see him back in the hizzy for another season. We got the rookie draft, Joe Everett, up in the house. G-Money. Who else? We got Mark SD to the show. Snake Eyes, of course. Fantasy Taz holding it down. Just a programming reminder, every Sunday, 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, we will be breaking it down for all the party people out there. You know how we do it. You can email us during the week, media@nfldraftbible.com. That will go to all of us. We will all get back to you. And, of course, we're on Twitter. And if you've been listening to the show, then you know how we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Get ready to rumble! Pump up the chain, pump it up, pump it up. Wake.